ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम द फिफ्थ कैंटो चैप्टर नंबर 19, चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द आइलैंड ऑफ जंबुद्वीप, टेक्स्ट नंबर 21। एतद् एव हि देवा गायन्ति, अहो अमिसां किमकारि शोभनम्, प्रसन्न एषां स्विदुटा स्वयं हरि। ए जन्म लब्धां नृषु भारता चिरे, मुकुंद सेवोपयिकं स्पृहाहिना। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। सिंस द ह्यूमन फॉर्म ऑफ लाइफ इज अ सब्लाइम पोजिशन फॉर स्पिरिचुअल रियलाइजेशन, ऑल द डेमिगॉड्स इन हेवन स्पीक इन दिस वे। How wonderful it is for these human beings to have been born in the land of Bharatvarsha. They must have executed pious acts of austerity in the past, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself must have been pleased with them. Otherwise, how could they engage in devotional service in so many ways? We demigods can only aspire to achieve human births in Bharatvarsha to execute devotional service, but these human beings are already engaged there. Purport. These facts are further explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela 9.41. Bharata Bhumite Hoila Manushya Janma Yar Janma Sartaka Karikara Paropakar. One who has taken his birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharatvarsha, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. There are many facilities in India, Bharatvarsha, for executing devotional service. In Bharatvarsha, all the acharyas contributed the experience, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally appeared to teach the people of Bharatvarsha how to progress in spiritual life and be fixed in devotional service to the Lord. From all points of view, Bharatvarsha is a special land where one can very easily understand the process of devotional service and adopt it to make his life successful. If one makes his life successful in devotional service and then preaches devotional service in other parts of the world, people throughout the world will actually benefit. We'll read the translation once again. So we are continuing our discussion of this 19th chapter. And in this particular verse, we see how the demigods are actually glorifying the people who have been born in this land of Bharatvarsha. Srila Prabhupada, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, writes in the purport that Bharatvarsha actually has come from the after the name of Bharat, the son of Lord Rishabhdev. And then Srila Prabhupada further says that actually there is another Bharat from whom the name Bharatvarsha has come, and he is the son of King Dushyant and Shakuntala. So some people say that his Bharatvarsha is named after the Bharat, who is the son of King Rishabhdev, and some say that the name Bharatvarsha has come after the son of King Dushyant and Shakuntala. But Srila Prabhupada says that we are convinced that actually the name Bharatvarsha has come after the son of King Rishabhdev. And this is the glorious land of Bharatvarsha, which is considered to be so holy even by the demigods. So the demigods want to take birth. They are saying that we are aspiring to take birth in this land of Bharatvarsha. And if we take birth in this land of Bharatvarsha, then we have an opportunity to further purify our life to go home back to Godhead. So this land of Bharatvarsha, from time immemorial, Srila Prabhupada in the third canto says that Bharatvarsha actually meant this entire planet Earth. But over a period of time, this Bharatvarsha has been said to be this land or this country called India. And Srila Prabhupada says that just like how India was earlier comprising of India and Pakistan, and how Pakistan was separated from India and became a separate country. Similarly, over a period of time, this entire planet Earth, which was originally Bharatvarsha, got segregated into various countries. And today, India is just one of these countries in this land of Bharatvarsha. So even if you go back just 50 years, we can see that the effects of Kali Yuga are progressing very, very fast. But just about 50 years back, one could see that this land of Bharatvarsha was really, as was stated in the scriptures, a very, very holy place. Particularly when went into the villages. I remember the time when I was very small, maybe 4 or 5 years old. And my parents would take me to our native place, which was a small village in Kerala. And this village had just about 20 or 25 families staying over there. It was a small hamlet. And all the activities of this residence of this particular village was centered around a small temple of Lord Ganesh. And every day in the morning, all the family members of all the houses would have their baths in the village pond. There was no water facility coming to the houses at that time, about 40 years back. And make their way directly to the temple. Some of them would make their way even in their wet clothes. First take darshan of Lord Ganesh. And then they would go home and carry on with their normal duties. There was no question of sense gratification. Morning, they would take darshan of the Lord. They would go to work the whole day. They would come back. And then the entire evening was spent in the temple premises. All the people would get together, do some kirtan, bhajan, read from some scripture. And then at about 8, 8:30, the temple would close and they would all go home and go to sleep. And I was surprised that when I went to this village a couple of years back, after practically 40 years, I'm visiting this village, and I was surprised to see that this thing is still continuing. This village is still the same. This village is separated from the main road by a distance of about 2 kilometers. You have to go through a mud road in order to reach this village. The buses or whatever, the vehicles would go about 2 kilometers away, so you would not even hear the sound of traffic. Of course, the houses had television now, naturally. They had telephones. They had water coming from the taps. So solar heaters, tractors, all this one could see. But nevertheless, the lifestyle of the people remained the same. They would still get up in the morning. Half of them would go to the pond, have their bath over there. Really, this pond was so well maintained. Clean, fresh water. A lot of lotuses growing in the pond. Very nice fragrance emanating from there. Nobody would even consider to contaminate this pond. They would answer nature's call far away in the fields, come, have bath, and then come directly to the temple, take darshan, and then go home. So although we see that this materialism, this age of Kali Yuga is coming particularly in the cities like Bombay, if one goes into the villages, one is still able to feel the effects of this wonderful tradition that we have been having for so many millenniums, millions of years. And I'm sure that what is going on today in these villages was happening all over the country. Practically all over the world, what to talk about all over the country. Because Prabhupada says that this land of Bharatvarsha actually meant this whole planet Earth. So even if you go back maybe 5,000 years or even 1,000, 2,000 years back, you would find that everywhere, all over the world, people must be having the same ethos, worship of God early in the morning, chanting the scriptures, meditating on the holy names. So this is true. When you see something happening like this just 2 years back, then you can imagine that such a thing definitely must have happened thousands of years back, all over the world. So Bharat Maharaj was one of those great kings who exemplified this particular quality of really being a sadhu, although he was a ruler of this entire world. He was such a pious king. And it's explained that he ruled over his kingdom for 10 million years. Not a short span of time. And then during this period, he had 5 sons. And then when he felt that he had now done sufficient service as a king, he gave his land, he gave the country to his 5 sons and retired to the forest. And started doing very severe austerities right on the banks of the river Gandaki. So the Prabhupada explained that this is the river where you have where the Shaligram Shilas come from. So on the banks of the river Gandaki, started having bath 3 times a day, and with wet hair, he would be meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was just waiting for death to come to him. Unfortunately for him, he came in the association of this deer. And because of the deer, he had to take birth once again in this material world in the form of a deer. So the Prabhupada explains that normally when a person leaves his body, then the Bhagavad Gita shloka, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajit antakalevaram, applies that whatever you think of at the time of death, that particular body you will obtain. But there is no recollection of the previous life. But in the case of Bharat Maharaj, because of his exalted position, he was given the opportunity to remember, although he was a deer, he was given an opportunity to remember his past life. And as a deer, he was leading this life in complete consciousness of his position as a living entity, completely dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he made a vow to himself that now, at least I will not be bewildered. And although he had the opportunity to associate with other deer, he did not associate with them. He would just live a solitary life, eating dry grass, living a life of complete austerity. With one single goal in his mind, that he would, at the end of this life, go home back to Godhead. And like this, he continued his life. However, at the end of his life, he had to take birth once again as Jada Bharat. That's a long story. But the point is that Bharat Maharaj, although he was such an exalted king, there was only one mistake that he made. He remained away from the association of devotees. Although his position was so exalted as a king who had performed all his kingly duties for so many millions of years and then went to the forest and performing such great austerities, to an extent that tears would come from his eyes, hair would stand on end, all the 8 symptoms of ecstasy would be manifesting in his body at all times. Still, because he was away from the association of devotees, he was not able to remember Krishna at the time of death. So we see how important it is for us to be in the association of devotees all the time. I remember a few years back when I was in Vrindavan, I came across a devotee who was so much attached to standing before the deities of Krishna Balaram that practically for hours together he would be standing before the deities and really very sincerely meditating, very deeply in a very, very prayerful mood he would be meditating on the deities. And I was always wondering, what is it that he was praying? Of course, we are told that when you come to before the deities, we should be really praying from the bottom of our heart. So I used to wonder, what is it that he was praying? So one day I summoned some courage in my heart and went and approached him and asked him, Prabhuji, what is it that so intensely you are praying before Krishna Balaram? There must be something that is there so deep in your heart that you must be praying very intensely. So he looked at me very gravely and very, very seriously. He said, Prabhu, my only prayer is that I leave my body in the association of devotees. This is the only thing that I am praying. And it really struck me at that time that all of us pray to Lord Krishna that we should be engaged in His service at all times. We should have the required facilities so that we can serve the devotees. These are all the prayers that we pray to when we come before the Lord. But here was a person who was intensely praying for hours together every day that my only desire should be that I should leave my body in the association of devotees. And really it struck me that this person is a very deep person because he has truly understood what is the benefit of association of devotees. Just like we saw in the passing of His Grace Toka Krishna Prabhu, when His Holiness Radhanath Swami asked him, are you ready to leave now? He said, yes, this instant. Right? Chaitanya Prabhu knows. I'm ready to leave now at this instant. Because he knew that if I leave my body now at this moment when devotees are all circling around me and chanting the holy name, that's a perfection of life. What more do I need? But unfortunately, we get so much caught up in our day-to-day work and day-to-day so-called duties that we forget that this is really what we are all striving for. Our goal of coming to Krishna consciousness is only for the purpose of trying to remember Krishna all the time and ensuring that we remember Krishna at the time of death. So indeed, this is really a very wonderful prayer when a devotee prays to the Lord, that my dear Lord, please ensure that I am leaving my body in the association of devotees. Because they will come to our help at that time to help us to remember Krishna. So Bharat Maharaj in his exalted situation, he was doing so much of tapasya. Still, he was so unfortunate that because he did not have the association of devotees, he had to take birth in the body of a deer, a lower creature, not even a human form of life. Of course, his background gave him this protection that he could always remember Krishna, even in the form of a deer. And even later on when he became Jadabharat, he had full recollection of his previous lives. And he became like a madman, doing exactly the opposite of what he was supposed to do. Because he didn't want to have any position in society. He had nothing to do with society. Although he was born in a well-to-do family. And he could have, if he wanted, taken definitely his share of money, his share of wealth. When his father left his body, he had no desire. And in fact, he would just be fed spoiled rice. But he never minded. He would be criticized by his brothers. And finally, he was given the task of a very menial task of ensuring that the crows and the birds do not come to eat the food grains that were growing in the fields. This is the sort of job that one would normally give to a person who was completely illiterate. Jadabharat, although he was a very exalted devotee, he was exhibiting this particular quality of being a person who was completely detached. Not only detached, he was acting as if he was mad. And his family members took advantage of him. He ensured that he didn't take any position in society. So a person who comes into Krishna consciousness with this desire of trying to follow what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnunam. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Really has to always contemplate, to think that when I am coming into this association of devotees, should I just continue to do what I was doing in my material life? In the material world, the nature of a person is that he's trained right from the beginning, right from his early childhood, to ensure that he has a particular position in society. Otherwise, it's of no use. Why is it that our parents tell us that, my dear sons, my dear daughters, you have to be studied, you have to study properly, you have to ensure that you get good marks, you have to get through your school, you have to go into college, and then after that you have to do your post-graduation. You have to become a doctor, you have to become an engineer, you have to become a chartered accountant, or you have to become a lawyer. Why do they tell us this? Because they want us to ensure that we have a particular position in society. I remember my father would tell me when I was a small child that if you are not studying properly, I'll see that you get a job in a restaurant cleaning vessels. And he would always tell me that this is what you actually fit for. Because you're not studying, this is what will happen to you. And actually, this will happen to you because you're not fit for this. You're not fit for studying. Constantly, I would hear from him. In the restaurant, washing vessels. So such a job is considered to be completely below the status of any person. Right? He would not go lower than that. A position lower than that would be a street sweeper. A bangi, for example. Because heart of hearts, maybe he was afraid that I might really become that. So right from childhood, we are taught that we have to be somebody in society. Otherwise, we have no use. So our parents try their level best. In fact, the goal of our parents, most parents, their whole life is spent only ensuring that the children get proper facilities so that they can become big people when they become big. They become people in respectable positions. And when they see that a person who has great material qualifications all of a sudden renounces everything and becomes a brahmachari washing vessels, which they always dreaded, washing vessels in the backup room of Radha Gopinath temple, then naturally it's very difficult for them to digest. Like we have, for example, our Dharmaraju Prabhu, a postdoc from the University of Ohio, I was told. And he's done his doctoral degree from Japan. Such a highly qualified person. But you see him doing his backup in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, night, 4 times a day. And practically each and every brahmachari in this ashram has gone through that stage sometime or the other. Because that is how you, that is how they break you. Break your ego. Whatever little bit of a ego that you have when you come into the temple and say that I want to join the brahmachari ashram, they ensure that that is also broken by the fact that you're required to work in this menial position in the backup room. And then after that, gradually you come up. Doing more and more service. You're given higher quality service depending upon your natural propensity. But not that you take position. Not for you to consider yourself that I am doing, or I am the temple president because I have this particular quality of leading people, of managing material things. Because of that, I have become the temple president. A real temple president will think that, oh, it's such a nuisance to be a temple president. Why do I want to be a temple president? So much of managerial work, so much of connection with material nature. I have to deal with so many people. A typical temple president in ISKCON has to deal with material nature to a very large extent. He has to meet people, engage in negotiations with them to either buy something or to provide something. And there is a constant tussle in his mind. On one hand, he's supposed to be doing his sadhana very nicely, but during the time when he's doing japa, he's thinking about executing this contract. So there's a lot of anxiety. But actually, when a person becomes a temple president, you should be thinking, oh my God, why have I become a temple president? Just like passing on the stick. We used to play this game. It's a stick that has come in your hand and it is really burning. During the time you become the temple president, you really find that your sadhana is going down. You're not able to hear Bhagavatam class attentively because you're thinking about so many things. You're worried about raising money. How do I collect funds? And the moment somebody else becomes the temple president, you pass the baton to him. Here, take it. You're very happy to pass the baton to him. That should be really the mood of a person who has come into Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, we have come over here just to take a position. And the quality of a person who is taking on position is that he has people below him. Otherwise, what is the use of the position? If you were the owner of this entire planet Earth and you were the only person in this whole world, there would not be any satisfaction. What's so great about that? Right? But the fact that if you are the president of the United States of America, right, and you are controlling the fortunes of 6 billion people, directly or indirectly, then you think that I'm really a great person. So this propensity for us to be a leader or a propensity on us, on our part to take a position means that we are automatically expecting somebody to be below us. That is so dangerous for us in Krishna consciousness. To just think that this person is actually below me, I am responsible for him or he is subordinate to me, I can command him. It's so dangerous to our Krishna consciousness. And actually in the material world, this is what is happening 24 hours of the day in whatever situation you may be. Whether you are working in your office, having maybe one assistant, or working as an industrialist, having thousands of people working under you, or even in a very small situation, like in your own house. When you want to be the boss of your house, this is basically an exhibition of this particular propensity that is there in you to be a controller. So in the association of devotees, we can always ensure, we can always be properly situated because we see other devotees who are following this principle to the best of their ability, trying to give up this particular position of being the controller, trying to give up this particular thought that they need some position. Srila Prabhupada, by his own personal example, he was trying to teach us exactly this. One time a devotee in Vrindavan who was a temple commander, was trying to really become a commander. So Srila Prabhupada will tell him that commander does not mean commander in chief. So he would meticulously ensure among his disciples that we have to ensure that we are not here to take up positions. Our eternal constitutional position is that of Gopi Bharator Pada Kamalayor Das 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 Anadas. That is our eternal constitutional position. And this particular offering that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave during the, I don't recollect whether it's appearance or disappearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In fact, tomorrow is the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said that all of you sitting over here are actually the representatives of my spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada, right at the bottom of his heart, he was feeling this, that you have come here to really help me to serve you. Because as a representative of his spiritual master, he had to consider that their position was much higher than his own. So this association of devotees, if we are in the right association, this will always make us remember that really we don't have any position. And if you look at the other sampradayas also, this is what they are teaching. Any Vaishnava sampradaya teaches us that the goal of life is to be eternally a servant. I remember when we were coming back from the South India Yatra, it so happened that by the side of us, there was a young boy, about 20 years of age, 20, 21 years of age. And he was sitting by the side, and he was reading his magazines and for quite some time, and he was seeing that I was chanting. So after about half an hour, he interrupted me and asked me, how many hours do you spend doing this? So I was immediately very happy that he didn't ask me, what are you doing? Unfortunately, in the West, when you go, people don't even have a conception what a devotee of Krishna means. When they see a devotee wearing dhoti and kurta, they think he's wearing bed sheets. When he's having a shaved head, they think that there is something unnatural about him. But at least here was a person who was sitting next to me and he was asking, how long or how many hours do you chant this holy names or whatever. He didn't ask me the holy name, but how many hours do you chant this? So that became a very wonderful excuse for me to start talking to him. And I told him we chant for about 2 hours a day. And I explained to him a little bit about our philosophy. And then I asked him, where are you coming from? He said, I'm coming from Bangalore. My parents stay in Bangalore. And I'm here in Bombay because I'm doing my law. I'm studying for my law examinations. So he said that actually my parents, they are Sri Vaishnavas. And their house, and my ancestral house, is located about 100 meters away from the main gate of Srirangam. I was actually flabbergasted. We're just coming back from Srirangam and right sitting next to me is a person whose parents stay about 100 meters away from the main doors of Lord Ranganath's temple. I said, my God, it's so much of a coincidence that we're just coming from there. And he said, my father is actually retired now. He was working as a director in the Life Insurance Corporation of India, in a very big position. And now he is on pension. So I asked him, what are you doing here in Bombay? You should be actually either in Srirangam or in Bangalore with your parents. So he thought for a few minutes and he said, yes, what you're saying is true. Actually, the reason why I am in Bombay is because I was feeling very claustrophobic when I was in Bangalore. I was always under the control of my parents. And my parents would all the time tell me to chant the names of Lord, to go to the temples. They would force me practically to come to our ancestral home in Srirangam and spend at least a month over there. And somehow I was feeling very claustrophobic, thinking that somehow, someday I should get out of this. And that's the reason why I have come here to Bombay. But he says, now, looking back, I really think and understand that my parents were really teaching me something that was so high. But because of my rebellious nature, because of my desire to want to enjoy, I wanted to stay away from them. And here, really, I'm suffering. I'm staying in a small paying guest room. The landlady treats me so badly. I pay 10,000 rupees a month. He stays somewhere at Nepean Sea Road in a small paying guest because his college is here. Law college is in town. So he stays somewhere close by. And he asked me, is there any place where I can stay close to the temple? I'm ready to pay up to 10,000 rupees, but I would like to stay close to the temple. So this quality, as soon as he saw that there was somebody trying to practice Krishna consciousness and who was talking to him about God, immediately that propensity which is there deep within us came to the surface. And he started really thinking to himself that I should be practicing Krishna consciousness. I should be thinking about God. And then I started talking to him more and more and more. And then I found out that actually, because he was in Bombay, he was having the association of people who are... He said that I don't smoke, I don't drink. That itself is a great quality by itself. To be in Bombay alone and not getting into any of those bad habits itself is a great achievement, no doubt. But nevertheless, he was thinking that when I go along with my friends, sometimes I have to go to a mixed restaurant. They eat non-vegetarian food, but then I eat vegetarian food. I know it's wrong. I should not be eating vegetarian food in a non-vegetarian restaurant. He has this realization, which has come to him right from birth. But because of this propensity to enjoy, somehow be in it, or be in, or whatever, with the crowd, belong. He was staying away from the association of his parents who were such wonderful devotees. And then he took my telephone number and then he said, I'll call you. In fact, he called me up yesterday, coincidentally. And then he started telling me, did you ask me? He asked me whether you found any accommodation. I told him, I tried 2-3 places, but I'm not able to get any accommodation that would suit you. He said, I'll send you an email. I want to come to the temple to meet you. So somehow that rejuvenation of consciousness, because of the association of his parents, because of the intense devotional ambience that was there in his house, for him, Krishna consciousness is so easy. Yeah. Just like Nityananda Prabhu, for him, devotional life is so easy. Yeah. Because he was born in a family of devotees who were actually practicing Krishna consciousness. So the power of association of devotees cannot be underestimated. Srila Prabhupada would so emphatically say that anybody who thinks that he can make advancement in spiritual life without the association of devotees, he is an illusion. So by Prabhupada's mercy, we have this wonderful International Society for Krishna Consciousness, where in every condition, a person who is completely degraded, like me, can come and take advantage and perfect his life. Just by the fact that we are in the association of devotees. And ISKCON is so wonderful that not only do you have the facilities to perfect your consciousness, but at the same time you also have an opportunity to perfect your body over here when you're doing yoga. So we have both. So this is the glory of what Srila Prabhupada has given us. And it is up to us to take advantage and pray to the Lord sincerely, just like this devotee in Vrindavan, that my dear Lord, please ensure that I leave my body in the association of devotees. Because then somehow or the other, the devotees will remind us of Krishna. Even though we may not have inclination to leave our body at that particular point of time, our attachment to our family, our attachment to our position may be so strong that we may not want to leave our body at that particular point of time. But Krishna, through the medium of the devotees, will give us the strength. But it is up to us how much we want to take advantage of whatever facility that Krishna has given us. If we are applying this principle of Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnunam, Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari, if we constantly chant the holy names of the Lord in the mood of trying to be more humble than a blade of grass and more tolerant than a tree, then Krishna, who is none different than the name, will give us the realization to somehow or the other always be in the association of devotees. He listened to our prayers when we intensely pray to him. Thank you very much. Please forgive me if I have said something incorrect or out of the scriptures. If there are any comments or questions. Thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Chai.